Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm.
Hi.
As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at buyer risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. I have a sensational guest today to talk about 9/11 in New York and whether dews or nukes or nanothermite were involved in the destruction of the Twin Towers. I think you're going to find this quite fascinating. Before we get there, however, Mitchell's come up with a fabulous article by Victor David Hansen, who many of you will know as this very thoughtful historian. He's one of the few who seems to me to get the truth out, entitled Save the Rule of Law by Destroying It. I think he's got it exactly right. So before I bring in my special guest, I want to share this with you. It will be on my blog later today. I've been putting it up as we prepare for today's conversation. David Victor Hansen. Some truths are so staggering in the ramifications that Americans simply shrug and tune them out as if strangers in a strange land. Is there current bewilderment because modernist America is unrecognizable? A non-existent border? Downtown homelessness juxtaposed to hipster professional elites? The EI racial essentialism cities reverting to pre-civilizational wastelands? Millions exiting blue states to red? An FBI and DOJ gone rogue? The normalization of violent theft and assault, biologically born men sandbagging women's sports and their locker room privacy. We are reaching the point where the once unbelievable has become the banal, as a single generation has done its best to undo the work of a prior 12 generations, considering the following. Three left-wing prosecutors are criminalizing politics, with more than 90 simultaneous indictments of Donald Trump, the ex-president, currently the leading Republican primary candidate, by a mile, I would add. A New York prosecutor, Letitia James, is hounding Trump with a $250 million state lawsuit against the Trump Organization and family, on the pretense of supposedly Trump overvaluing his real estate and filing inaccurate financial statements. Is there any mafia, don, mass murderer, or terrorist who's faced so many indictments or suits in so many jurisdictions at almost the same time? The prosecutors' immediate lawfare agendas seem transparent enough. They wish to bankrupt candidate Trump with endless legal costs and humiliate him with his mugshot blasted over the internet and put endless Lilliputian legal robes over a shackled candidate Gulliver and inflate the ego and agendas of local prosecutors and purportedly earn Trump empathy enough to win the nomination, only be hemorrhaged with still more indictments, gag orders, and court appearances to bleed him out in the general election. Americans ask themselves questions whose answers are never given. Why are all these Trump prosecutors left-wing or have Democrat connections? Would any of the 90-something indictments for crimes of years past been lodged against a citizen Trump who had retired from politics? Why are these indictments of alleged wrongdoing of years ago now in the summer of 2023 suddenly being synchronized in left-wing jurisdictions of New York, Washington, Miami, and Atlanta at the beginning of the 2024 election cycle? Are any of the indictments against Trump also applicable to others? Alvin Bragg's charge of campaign finance violations. How about Hillary Clinton in 2016? Jack Smith's allegation of encouraging mass civil arrest. How about Kamala Harris in 2020? Illegally removing and possessing classified federal documents. How about Joe Biden, 2009 to 2022? Letitia James lawsuit alleging financial irregularities and fraud. How about Al Sharpton, 2009 to 2014? Fannie Willis claim Trump was seeking to sabotage the constitutional duties of state electors. Martin Sheen and an array of B-list Hollywood actors in 2016, and colluding to interfere with an election. How about Fannie Willis right now, 2023 to 24? Will any losing Republican candidate in a contested election any longer question the integrity of questionable balloting in the manner of Vice President Al Gore in 2000, Senator Barbara Boxer, and 32 Democrat congressional representatives in 2004? Candidate Jill Stein or Hillary Clinton in 2016, or Stacey Abrams, 2018, and thereby risk financial and career crippling indictments? Will conservative district attorneys in places like Wyoming, Alabama, or West Virginia now seek to indict a Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Gavin Newsom, turn notoriety to weaken the opposing party, to leapfrog to higher office in a manner that we should expect of Fannie Willis or Alvin Bragg to be currently planning? When Republicans retake the Congress and the White House, will they begin indicting all the weaponized prosecutors who colluded to exempt a grifting Hunter Biden for 5 years? Will they try Joe Biden as a corporate citizen for his prior corruption over the last 15? Why would Donald Trump believe that 2020 election was rigged? Was he cribbing that belief from liberal journalist Molly Ball's braggadocious 2021 Time essay? After all, she outlined what she called a left-wing cabal and conspiracy to change voting laws, turn on, turn off the 2020 Antifa BLM street protests, absorb the work of registrars, and suppress unwelcome social media news. Was it more morally suspect to question the ethics surrounding the election of 2020 or for Mike Zuckerberg to infuse $419 million to absorb in asymmetrical fashion the work of the registrars in key swing precincts? A cardboard cutout president. We are witnessing the daily deterioration of President Biden to the point that caricature and jokes about his senility are no longer funny. He's not just an embarrassment, but becoming an existential danger to the country. Does anyone believe that in a national crisis over Taiwan or nuclear escalation in Ukraine, Joe Biden would or could make the final decision? Biden cannot finish a teleprompter sentence without slurring his words, losing his place, screaming and whispering in incoherent fashion. If that is his public persona, what is he like in private sessions of governance? He spontaneously both shouts angrily. And creepily whispers for effect. Moving a lightweight aluminum beach chair becomes a Herculean task. In almost every impromptu speech, Biden flat out lies or spins self-serving autobiographical fantasies, often in the midst of foreign dignitaries, grieving families, and refugees from devastating natural disasters. Biden often does not know where he is on stage or where he is to enter or exit. He is one fall from oblivion. Not since Woodrow Wilson, finally in office, has any president simply been unable to fulfill his duties, both physically and cognitively. Or perhaps the country is in the same position as when an ailing Franklin Roosevelt in late 1944 was deemed just hailed enough to get elected and continue Democratic control of the White House, but not healthy enough to finish his first year in office, necessitating the rapid removal from the ticket of the socialist vice president and an otherwise likely 1945 president, Henry Wallace. Yet there's been almost no serious speculation in Congress or among the cabinet about invoking the 25th Amendment. This silence is doubly strange given the WEF's former fixation between 2017 and 21 with removing Trump by any means possible, including invoking the 25th. That silly effort led to the surreal, the acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe, the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, scheming to wiretap Trump in private conversations to reveal his supposed craziness, or the Congress dragging in an incompetent Yale psychiatrist to testify at a distance she had diagnosed Trump as demented. Do we recall Pentagon officials and officers talking openly about a military coup to remove the supposedly touched commander-in-chief? Our chairman of the Joint Chiefs contacted the head of the People's Liberation Army to warn him Trump might be unhinged. So is General Mark Milley now making yet another call to General Lee Zhou-Cheng of the People's Liberation Army to warn that Joe Biden is dangerously disturbed? It is precisely that entire cast of characters now sit mum, as Joe Biden believes we are fighting in Iraq against the Russians, or that his late son Beau died in action in Iraq. It's impossible to square the tens of millions of dollars that flowed from abroad to the Biden accounts with any concrete expertise rendered or income reported as taxable. Is the tolerance of Biden's senescence because his blank stares and mental confusion prove useful to the left by exempting the president from offering any defense for his mostly defenseless policies or defending his absurd claims to know nothing of the Biden family grifting operation that were predicated on his own office? Or do the puppeteers, the Obamas, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, the hard leftists of the party, find a non-compos mantis Biden mannequin a useful veneer in pushing through their extreme agenda? Or does the media call the shots, especially after they propelled a basement-bound Biden to the White House? Mainstreaming corruption. There have been a few corrupt presidents in our past who, as in the case of Lyndon Johnson, left office far richer than when they entered or were surrounded by rogues, Grant and Harding, or were masters of leveraging and grifting long-term contracts and networks in their lame duck tenures to ensure their impending multimillionaire status the day they left office, the Clintons and the Obamas. But never in memory has an entire extended presidential family been involved in selling influence for millions of dollars in quid pro quo lucre, the vast majority of such ill-gotten gains likely untaxed by being channeled through sham companies, foreign deposits, fake names, and alias email accounts. Never has a corrupt presidential family itself offered so much proof of its own guilt. Do the Democrats have any idea of the smelly Biden albatross hanging around their collective neck? How much longer can they continue to dismiss the communications of the Hunter Biden laptop, or the testimony of IRS whistleblowers, or the assertions of Biden family business associates, or the statement of relevant Ukrainian oligarchs, or the latest assertion to Viktor Shokin, or the extraordinary efforts of the Bidens to stonewall subpoenaed documents, use fake names and shadow email accounts, compromise federal prosecutors, appoint sham special counsels, use media toadies to the point of embarrassment to hide the ugly truth. In sum, what were the Bidens so afraid of that prompted them to corrupt the DOJ and FBI to stonewall any discussion of the huge cash infusions that came from abroad into their family coffers? Americans have impeached or nearly impeached presidents before for abuse of power, lying under oath, or supposedly using government to pursue their own personal agenda or harass their enemies. But never has a president been so clearly compromised by bribery from shady foreign government-related grandees in expectation of favorable treatment. In other words, there's growing evidence that Jim and Hunter Biden, and likely Jim Biden as well, Joe and Hunter Biden and likely Jim Biden as well, made millions of dollars in the hope that then Vice President Biden, perhaps one day a future President Biden, would alter or compromise U.S. foreign policy on the expectation of getting rich. The State Department's Ukraine team deemed Viktor Shokin making progress in rooting out corruption. So why did Joe Biden, without consultation, fire him? Did Biden put his own financial interests above the country's in a fashion the Founding Fathers worried was impeachable treason? If the current investigation are not halted or compromised, we may soon learn why the Constitution explicitly specified bribery and treason as ironclad causes for impeachment. Can Americans even comprehend that they've elected a dishonest man to the presidency who's protected by his own senility, his decades-long everyman construction of old Joe Biden from Scranton, his usefulness as a prop to the radical left-wing agenda, and the defensive and offensive weaponization of the criminal justice system? Can Americans digest that instead of campaigning against Donald Trump, out-debating him, outspending him, and outfoxing him, the government must unleash kindred prosecutors to destroy Trump by blowing up the entire tradition of blind American jurisprudence? Are the media and left claiming that to save the rule of law from Trump, they must first destroy it? Mitchell, I think David Hansen, Victor Hansen, got it exactly right. I think this is a wonderful piece. I want to invite first your and then Alan's comments. Mitchell, your thoughts.
Well, Jim, you know, we live in a time, you know, it's often said a universal deceit, you know, particularly coming, you know, from government. But it's not an accident. You know, it's a calculated plan. And it's a step-by-step brainwashing of all humanity. If we could get Obama, Biden, and the rest of his staff, you know, they should be indicted for what they did to Trump. I mean, there is no doubt, you know, it's still the continuing pattern that all of the crimes that have been committed by Democrats against Trump and the United States are now being foisted at Trump in kind of this, you know, this bastardization of justice. And it truly is political perversion of it all.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable the degree of corruption involved here. Alan, I'd like to invite you to offer your thoughts about the state of affairs, sordid, unbelievably lawless, United States is not just a banana republic. It's far below that. It's a criminal enterprise. Your thoughts, Alan?
Well, my thoughts are that, you know, you got to think about, well, who are the bad guys and why are they bad and why are they doing this? And got to realize that this, it's really a battle against spiritual things in high places. And I think a lot of people are corrupted, coerced, blackmailed. They get into things. You know, I believe in the living God who can, you know, make it rain and made the earth, and people who can, you know, we can do things in the material world. But I think there's a whole supernatural world, and these demonic entities, they can't really do things in the physical, but they can plant information. They can corrupt people's thoughts, just like Garden of Eden. So I think that that's really, you know, and the satanic force has been around for many, many, many years. And, you know, we don't have a chance. And I think a lot of these people who do such bad things are kind of victims of satanic influences, and they can all be redeemed, but most of them probably won't. So.
Yes, yes. Well, one of the ironies, of course, is that the more they indict, the greater the support. It's especially been illustrated in Georgia, where the black community is overwhelmingly supporting Trump now because they see him as subjected to the same kinds of abuse of the law to which they themselves have historically been subjected. But, you know, when they try to make out by bringing RICO charges against Trump, that he is actually the don of a crime family, when the evidence is so abundant and compelling that it's Biden who's the head of a crime family, you just see the PR stunt. This is just a propaganda ploy, a psyop, to make it look like Trump is the one who's running the crime family when it's overwhelmingly obvious it's Biden. In my lifetime of 82 years, I've never seen anything remotely comparable to this. And, of course, the media has completely abdicated its responsibility to hold the government accountable in a fashion never before seen. And I do believe it has a whole lot to do with Israel having our control of our Congress and control of our media. So that none of this is really intended to publish a truth. I mean, just look at how many cases, financial violations, Hillary Clinton encouraging mass unrest, Kamala Harris, illegal moving and possessing classified docs, Biden, the financial irregulars and fraud, Sharpton, claimed Trump was sabotaging the duty of state electors. Whole lot of Hollywood actors in 2016. I mean, it just goes on and on. The monsters who are in control are not prosecuting those who are actually committing the real offenses, but rather using fabricated charges against Trump for their own, to achieve their own political agenda, which they manifestly cannot do if this were on the up and up. Mitchell, further thoughts?
Well, Jim, it's I have been terming it, you know, this the only way I can describe it is full spectrum dominance. OK, you know, there was once this intelligence program where they really wanted to know everything everywhere all the time. And well, they have it now. They can literally propagandize and effect in real time, but not just get the information out, but they can censor information in real time. So not only can they have gotten to where they propagandize at will, on cue, anytime, they will also censor anything, anytime, anywhere to achieve their means.
Yes, yes. Alan, any further thoughts of yours?
I'm just so sick of it, but it just, you know, kind of is frightening. You know, I'm kind of concerned about what we're going to talk about for the rest of the hour here. You know, I don't want to get snuffed. so it's kind of scary to not be able to tell the truth in this world without facing repercussions. So pray.
Yeah, and of course, the truth about JFK, 9/11, even the moon landing. I mean, the government has perpetrated so many frauds on the American people. It's truly disgusting and outrageous. And the media, sad to say, has been complicit in perpetrating these frauds. If Trump had done no more than to call out the fake news media, in my opinion, he would have deserved the admiration and respect of every American. Because we've reached a point where too many were simply taking for granted. They were playing the role of gullible saps in relation to what they were hearing from the government when it was remote from truth. It was pure propaganda. And as I endlessly explained, that has something to do with the fact that 100 execs of CNN are dual U.S. citizens, 100 execs from NBC are dual U.S. Israeli citizens, 100 execs from the New York Times are dual U.S. Israeli citizens. Remember, the New York Times is the nation's newspaper of record. What appears in the New York Times is supposed to be, get this, the official history of the United States. That's what it means to be the nation's newspaper of record. And they're doing a miserable job of it. I had friends, for example, a woman to whom I was actually even engaged when I was an assistant professor at Kentucky, lived and breathed the New York Times. She had a habit first thing in the morning, last thing at night. She read every word and she believed it. Today, anyone who held that stance would be viewed as having lost it, having no conception of what really is going on out there in the world. Because almost 90% of what they publish is fake news. We'll be right back with Alan and talk about 9/11. Stand by.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Ah. Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, as, of course, regular listeners are well aware, it appears directed energy weapons were used in Maui, whether they were lasers, masers, microwaves, maybe still open for discussion, but that this was not a naturally occurring wildfire is provable on multiple grounds. The official narrative was that Hawaiian Electric had left their power on and that high winds had caused some of them to fall, their electric top towers causing the fires to ignite. But it turns out that Hawaiian Electric shut off the power 6 hours before. There was no juice in the lines. So that's not a possible explanation. We also know from isolated cars, not to mention the boats out in the water that were destroyed, parts of which melted, such as aluminum wheels and their glass windshields, that since wildfires don't burn at temperatures above 400 degrees Fahrenheit, but the aluminum would not melt below 1300 and the windshields closer to 4000, we're being played. I mean, these are laws of nature that cannot be violated and cannot be changed. Now, in New York, I invited Steve Jones to be my co-chair when I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth. Steve, even though, and this is significant, he has a background in nuclear energy, advocated the nanothermite theory, whereby June of 2006, I was convinced thermite couldn't cut it, meaning that literally and figuratively. I would subsequently publish 3 articles with a chemical engineer, T. Mark Hightower, in 2011, demonstrating the impossibility of nanothermite having blown apart the towers, including the fact that for cement to be destroyed, an explosive must have a detonation velocity of 3,200 meters per second. For steel to be pulverized, 6,100 meters per second. And at the highest attributed detonation velocity for nanothermite in the scientific literature is only 895 meters per second, meaning you can't get there from there. To compound the absurdity, Niels Harrit, who is a retired associate professor of chemistry at the University of Copenhagen, has to estimate how much nanothermite it would take to destroy a twin towers. Offer the figure 26,000 metric tons. 26,000 metric tons. I mean, that's just staggering and reflects the fact that nanothermite is a feeble explosive. Feeble, only has 1/13 the explosive power of TNT. Therefore, toward the end of 2006, I began interviewing Judy Wood in what would turn out to be 15 interviews where I was pioneering interaction between radio and the internet, because in each of those 15 shows, we go to Judy's website, have our listeners go to Judy's website and talk about contents, videos, photographs, where she has a stupendous accumulation. During the Vancouver hearings, which I organized in 2012, however, I discovered a vast amount of evidence that it had actually been done using nuclear devices, mini nukes in the sub basement. And because it appears that all of the phenomena, all the data points are explicable by the mini-nuke hypothesis, but some are not by the directed energy hypothesis. I have advocated the mini-nuke. But looking at what happened in Lahaina, I'm now more open to the possibility that directed energy weapons were also used in New York on 9/11, even if it was in a pilot project as a supplement. And I'm delighted to say that in conversation I've had with Alan, he's gravitated in the same direction. He has very sophisticated insights about how all of this was done, and I'm therefore ecstatic to have him here with me today. Alan, take the floor.
Okay. Well, first, let me give you just a little background. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to say too much. But I spent 30 years in the intelligence military community working on advanced weapons technologies and programs. I've got a degree in electrical engineering with a focus on electromagnetic fields and waves. So, you know, I think about waves going around me all the time and what are the frequencies and stuff like that. But, okay, so let's talk primarily about 9/11 here. I believe that the primary target on 9/11 was the Pentagon, in that the Twin Towers were kind of a, let's get two birds with one stone because they needed to come down anyway, and maybe to refocus attention. But on the Pentagon, I really think that was the primary target. I think it was because they had just finished a hardened skiff with all the financial records for all the black world things that go on. And in the intelligence community, the DOD people tend to be more honest or upfront than the things that go on in CIA and NSA and places like that. Even though we have secrets, I think the DOD seems to be more of an honest broker, primarily because the people get rotated. They don't sit in one place long enough to be corrupted and coerced and become part of the Good Old Boy Network, because they go to different jobs and things. Some of the worst people, I believe, or the biggest big element of this deep state is the senior executive service. The SES civilians are just not to be trusted, from my experience. So I think that the primary target was taking out that database, those computers in the Pentagon that held all the black world financial information. And I think it was Donald Rumsfeld, is that right?
Yes.
Who announced the day before 9/11 that, we were missing like $2.2 trillion, $3 trillion. So sometimes, this is one of my favorite analogies. You know, we kind of know about million, billion, trillion. We know one's bigger than the other. But just an object lesson here. We can wrap our heads around $1 million house, things like that. So if I borrow $100 from you and say I will pay you back in 1 million seconds, you'll get your money back in about 12 days. If I say I'll pay you back in 1 billion seconds, you're going to get your money back in 32 years. If I tell you I'll pay you back in 1 trillion seconds, you're going to get your money back in 32,000 years. Can you imagine that? That's 32,000 years of seconds is how much $1 trillion is. It's like, you know, it's a lot. So anyway, so I think that really was the primary target. And there are some things that would indicate, you know, it doesn't seem like it was a plane for sure. We saw stuff on the grounds afterward that weren't there during the, you know, early footage of what happened. Because I'm focused on electromagnetic fields and waves, you know, there were some reports that, and I think there are some clocks that stopped, electrically powered clocks that stopped just shortly before the missile hit the Pentagon. And there were reports that they heard there were like small explosions that went off in that vault right before the drone hood or whatever it was. Anyway, you know, it would appear to me that somebody did put small EMP devices, explosively driven, to make sure that all the hard drives and equipment was definitely wiped out. So I think that really was the primary thing that happened there. What, Shanksville, the plane that crashed in Pennsylvania, they never excavated that and got all the way out. I mean, if somebody dies in a landslide or miners, we always dig down and get them out. I mean, that's highly unlike the United States to not totally excavated where that plane went down. So I don't think that was real. I don't think there was anybody on that plane. So now let's talk about the Twin Towers. Judy Wood did a great thing at capturing information. She gets some unhappiness expressed because she doesn't call out a mechanism or how she thinks it was done. She reports on what was done. I think that's very respectable of her to not propose a hypothesis, actually. It's kind of like there's an analogy of a clock. You can imagine, you know, you've seen the works of a grandfather clock. I see one. It seems like it's probably got the same gears and things that maybe we've seen before. But you don't know if the clock works are locked up and you can't see. Might be battery powered. Could be nuclear powered. You never know. You can design things that look like other things. So I think it's good of her, even though she collected all this information, to not propose a theory that could be wrong. But her book is great and the things in there are great. So without further ado, let me tell you what I think happened on 9/11. There's a thing, what is it, Occam's razor, I don't know if I'm saying that right, that yes. Indicates, you know, if you got different options to consider, you should always take the simplest one. I think in all of this conspiracy theory stuff, that should be just totally disregarded. That's a bad idea. You know, in the JFK assassination, it's way easier to believe that Lee Harvey Oswald just did it and they had all this stuff against him, even with the weird bullet trajectory thing. It's way easier to believe that than what really happened. Same, you know, Gulf of Tonkin, you know, it's easier to believe that they opened fire on us versus what really happened. Sandy Hook, it's easier to think that some kind of troubled young guy did this thing, instead of what really happened, which is kind of big and ugly. So, you know, I've had some people say, you know, hey, if as long as we got evidence that there were nuclear devices involved in the Twin Towers, you need look no further because that explains it all. I don't think that does explain it all. So I'm throwing out Occam's razor on this one. So the other thing that I want to put in here from introduction is, you know, Tesla came up with things that were totally different than different way of thinking about electromagnetic fields and waves and electricity and stuff. And so in the Tesla things that he did, they often involved, you know, high voltage, lots of available electrons, and some kind of oscillation vibration kind of thing. So those are three keys: high voltage, enough electrons to use that voltage, and manipulating the frequencies. There's a guy who passed away not too long ago that I was associated with, a guy named Tom Bearden, that I would think people would really like to hear about. He thought of all of this stuff in a different way also, very much like Tesla. He got in trouble a little bit and afraid for his life because a lot of the technology that we're talking about leads to free energy and anti-gravity and other things. Some forces don't want us to talk about. But I had a degree in electrical engineering with mostly electromagnetic fields and waves and such like that. I will tell you that in college, we were pretty much lied to about the math. And we were lied to about electricity, basic stuff. Maxwell's equations are the things that we base all of our electromagnetic fields and waves and all that kind of stuff on. Well, Maxwell's equations were really originally written in quaternion math. And quaternion math is kind of hard, kind of different. And Maxwell's equations were dumbed down by a guy named Heaviside so we could use it in the way we think of the way we do our math for electricity and stuff. Well, quaternion math, it turns out, and I could get in trouble with this, but, you know, the Star Wars program, we're spending billions of dollars on it, and then suddenly it just kind of disappeared. It didn't disappear. We're still spending trillions of dollars. But one of the things that goes on in the solution they found is quaternion math is a big part of that. Quaternion math is a little different. The only other place they use it that I know of is in the advanced gaming systems. Well, even like, you know, some of the auto driving kinds of things. And what's different about quaternion math is like if you start at a scene, like you're going to drive a car down a road, you can run that car right into a fire hydrant and things will explode and burning and stuff like that. You can do the same thing exactly the same and the flames will be different, the explosion will be different. You can be at a level where you're trying to get through a door and you know there's a guy to the right because you've been there before that you got to shoot. You can shoot him the very same way and the blood will be different. It's not any canned video at all. It learns, develops itself. So, and the way just electricity goes through a flashlight with the voltage and the electrons and the resistance and stuff like that, it's a quaint kind of, you know, useful way to make things work, but it's not how it really works. And so in this quaternion math, I don't want to belabor it too much, but you know, we use this thing pi in normal fields and waves, a lot of pi, 2 pi r, that kind of thing. And pi is what? Some irrational number that keeps going on forever. Well, in quaternion math, pi is like 1. In quaternion math, there are no imaginary numbers. So it's very interesting, the things that we've been told that aren't really true. So here I go. Am I belaboring this too much, Jim? You're ready to go on your Twin Towers?
You're doing fine, Alan. Just go ahead and lay it out. I mean, I differ on a couple of points, but that's insignificant. I want you to just lay out your expertise, especially in relation to how the Twin Towers appear to have been destroyed.
Okay. Well, first of all, I believe that what was created was we kind of made them a big lightning rod. And I believe that mini nukes were definitely part of making them into a big lightning rod. I think there was small fission devices in the basement, but I'm not sure that they were designed to cause damage necessarily, or the damage we saw. When you have a fission reaction, one of the main things you get is a bunch of cesium isotopes, and different cesium isotopes decay at different rates, nanoseconds to thousands of years. In the intelligence community, if they want to find out if a country set off a nuclear device, they look for cesium-131 because it has a half-life of about 10 days. And then you can tell, did this reaction happen soon? You got to get to it fast, but you can kind of link something that might have been an earthquake to maybe an underground nuclear test by detecting the cesium-131. Well, the thing about cesium, which is one of the main products from a fission reaction, is it's one of the most electronegative substances there are. Most electromagnetic elements there are. So what that effectively does, if you create that cesium, it acts like a lightning rod. It pulls down the energy, the voltage, essentially, from the ionosphere. In, you know, we've got millions of volts constantly from the ionosphere, between the ionosphere and the Earth. And when the insulation breaks down, we get lightning kind of thing. That's why we get thunderstorms, stuff like that. The all the electron volts, you know, interact with the Earth because of the voltage difference. So that's there all the time. So I believe the first step was they set off these small nuclear devices to make those towers into a channel with the ionosphere that is almost, you know, think of it as controlled lightning. Not enough to really cause lightning, but the voltage all wanting to come down. And then I believe what they did was they used HARP, if I'm not going to go into what HARP is, to vibrate the ionosphere to create wave fronts, vibrations in that channel, electromagnetic wave fronts in that channel. Okay, so you've got the controlled lightning voltage thing. Now you've got Tesla was all about, you've got the vibration coming down coming down that channel. And then I believe the key part of it was Building 7. I think they had another transmitter in Building 7. There were some reports that large amounts of coolant and things might have been delivered to that building before 9/11. I think they had another transmitter in Building 7, and it was aimed at an angle to the column of energy that was available from the nuclear devices, and they used interferometry. If you're familiar with interferometry, and you can look it up, it's how you can use certain frequencies coming at different angles to see things that's smaller than the wavelength of those frequencies, or to create frequencies. An example kind of in the real world is if you've got two ski boats out on a lake, you see their waves, but when those waves hit, you get all kinds of weird things. You can make things in water that look like squares if you just create the wave patterns right in the water. So by doing that from two different angles, you didn't have to have all the energy in the Building 7 transmitter, but you could create the interference patterns that you wanted at different frequencies. So if you think of a laser, the early ruby lasers, what do? They shined light at a certain frequency that would excite the outer level electron. And then when that light stops, the electron falls back to a lower energy state and gives off energy in a specific wavelength. Okay, so I believe they manipulated with HARP coming down the channel and providing the high voltage, and the manipulation of the frequencies and waves, and they probably scanned through and did things for different purposes. From Building 7, they created essentially energy that, and this was what I believe is the key mechanism, and this was mentioned in one of your first things, is molecular dissociation. If you add energy at just the right frequencies, you don't have to have a lot of heat. You can break the molecules apart. And you should look up, you can Google it. It's one of the hottest things in, going forward, is this thing of molecular dissociation. You add energy through frequencies and things, and you actually break apart the molecules into component, neutrons, protons, electrons, those kind of things. So when you let that go back, when you take the energy away, it goes back to the lowest, easiest state. It's kind of like if you think about steel or aluminum, we've had to add energy and processes to purify those things and give those things order. And even trees or plants, something takes place that gives that material order when it goes back to its raw elements. It'll automatically go back to a lower state, like things want to come to lead, things want to rust, things come back. So I think that is what happened, is they essentially added energy from the ionosphere to the molecules to dissociate them. And when it was done, everything turned into dust, turned into a lower energy, unorganized state. Another thing to think about with that is there was a pop-up hurricane that blew up kind of in the area and went away. What would have happened there is hurricanes cause ice crystals in the upper atmosphere. Ice crystals in the upper atmosphere create static electricity, which is just really free electrons. So that gave them the extra electrons they needed. You had the voltage already from the ionosphere, between the ionosphere and the Earth, with the Twin Towers acting like a lightning rod in this control thing. Now they added through weather manipulation.
Alan, hold that thought. We'll be right back. We'll be right back after this break.
Okay.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out "And Nobody Died in Boston Either." Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, my featured guest today, Alan, is giving us a rather thoroughgoing explanation of how he believes the Twin Towers were destroyed. Alan, please do continue. Excellent.
Okay, well, I think I left off talking about the pop-up hurricane that would have created the extra free electrons to do this. Another thing that is in Judy Wood's book, you know, Where Did the Towers Go?, is towards the back, she talks about magnetic sensors that are around the world that detect lightning. When we have lightning strikes, it affects the magnetic fields in the earth, things like that, so they can see lightning strikes around the world. Apparently, there were the same kind of thing that looked like lightning ongoing at the very time and place that the Twin Towers were brought down. So, you know, I think that adds some credence to the idea that this was kind of like controlled lightning with a little stuff put on it. The other thing, you know, I also am very interested in what we call the toasted cars around that area. If you look at what happens with a microwave oven, you know, there's some things you don't want to put in a microwave oven because weird stuff happens if you put metal in a microwave oven. But the frequencies of a microwave affect water. You know, you got to have something wet. If it's dry, the cup doesn't get hot, but the water does for your coffee. But it affects oil even more than at those frequencies, even more than water. So there were things with the toasted cars where engines were blown out. But the other thing was the door handles were blown out. And I think I know why that happened. Why would the door handles blow out? Well, I think the engines and transmissions were blown out because some of the frequencies generated by the whole deal were in those resonant frequencies, like a microwave, and the oil and gas and stuff was affected by it. But the door handles are interesting because the door handles, if you remember, we used to make things, toys and stuff, all out of white metal. Car door handles are made out of special kind of white metal, so that in the wintertime, when you get static electricity shocks, you don't get a shock from your door handle. So it's kind of a, you know, a substance that conducts electricity, but not very well, maybe, kind of like an insulator kind of thing. So I think that the frequencies they used, like putting something you shouldn't in a microwave, interacted with those door handles and blew them out. And I don't see any other explanation for why that would have been the case with the cars. So that's what I got for you on 9/11. That's my theory.
Yeah, about the Pentagon, I certainly agree that they had to attack the Pentagon in order to have a justification for war. I mean, if it had just been an attack on the World Trade Center, for example, then there would not have been a military dimension. So they had to fabricate the attack on the Pentagon. And based upon my research, yes, it was a missile fired by an unmanned aerial vehicle. It appears to have been a Global Hawk. We even had Jamie McIntyre, who is the best reporter for CNN on the scene, explain to the anchor, Judy Woodruff, I think, that when she spoke of a plane having hit the Pentagon, he replied that you might think that, but from his close-up inspection, there was no sign of any plane having hit anywhere near the Pentagon. He's got that absolutely right. They did fly a plane toward the building that then swooped over it. I even have a friend with a trucker buddy who witnessed it and told him how he watched his plane approach a Pentagon and then fly over it. At the same time, explosives were set off in the front of the building. There's so much going on here, Alan. With regard to Occam, what's essential to understand regarding the principle is that you should prefer the simplest or the most economical or the most elegant explanation, provided that it can account for all the data. So you're right, naively thinking about, say, Sandy Hook or 9/11 or JFK. On its face, it's simpler to suppose, yeah, one guy shot Jack from the sixth floor of the book depository, or 19 Islamic terrorists attacked the world on 9/11, or a kid shot up and killed 20 children and six adults at Sandy Hook. But when you start digging deeper, when you discover, for example, Lee Oswald was in the doorway of the book depository when the JFK motorcade came by, that autopsy actually were patched to conceal a fissile blowout at the back of the head, that two shots were widely reported the day of the event, a small puncture wound to the throat, which Malcolm Perry, EMD, three times described as a wound of entry, and then a second shot that entered the right temple and blew half his brains out the back of his head, attributed to Admiral George Berkeley, the present personal physician, for example. Or in relation to 9/11, that you have impossible phenomena being presented. You got planes entering massive 500,000-ton steel and concrete buildings, intersecting with eight floors, in the case of the South Tower, seven with regard to the North. Each floor consists of a steel truss connected at one side to the massive core columns, at the other to the external steel support columns, which were quite formidable in and of themselves. In the same number of frames passing its whole length into the building as it passed its whole length in air, then clearly something's wrong from the point of view of physics, unless a massive 500,000-ton steel and concrete building provides no more resistance to the trajectory of an aircraft in flight than air. And, you know, it goes on with Sandy Hook. Yeah, we know what we were all told, but then it turns out that we have a manual for a mass casualty exercise there, that all of it appears to be fabricated or faked, albeit in quite a variety of ways, that there FBI Consolidated Crime Report from 2012 at the intersection of murder or non-negligent manslaughters for Newtown, which includes Sandy Hook, has a big fat zero in it. But when you dig further, you find evidence that some of the kids attended their own funeral, that the parents weren't even allowed to see their kids at the time. They only identified them on the basis of photographs, which appears to be correct because it's provable some of the kids were simply manufactured out of photographs, in one case of his older sibling, his older brother. So when you take into account all of the available relevant evidence, and that, of course, can change across time, then you may have to reject hypotheses you previously accepted, accept hypotheses you previously rejected, and leave others in suspense. So it's not really throwing out Occam. It's that Occam only applies when you reach a point of having two alternative theories that explain all of the data equally well, but one does so by invoking a more parsimonious explanatory framework. It's like, the argument that John Jones avoided becoming pregnant last year because he took his wife birth control pills, and all men who take their wives' birth control pills do not become pregnant, when we know that men don't become pregnant whether they take birth controls or not, pills or not, regardless of what the Democrats may be telling us, which, of course, is so insane that it's got to be part of a deliberate psyop to make us believe absurdities, which, as I believe Voltaire remarked, if they can make us believe absurdities, they can induce us to commit atrocities. Alan, I love all your expertise. It's fascinating.
On the 9/11 thing of nukes might explain it all, I have to admit that I don't have much background on what the radiation and things from that kind of a device would really have, on a building and on that kind of thing. It looked to me, from the videos of the Twin Towers, that the thing was brewing for a while and stuff, not like instantaneous, which would seem to me to be this molecular dissociation thing. But I have to admit, I'm sure there were nuclear detonations involved, with my theory here too. And I'm not really certain if the neutrons and cosmic rays and gamma rays and everything like that would cause that damage like that or not.
Yes. Well, one thing for sure, we did have this massive molten iron beneath the ground that endured until mid-December. That required tremendously high temperatures. Frankly, I think that's more plausibly explained on the basis of nuclear devices and dues, but I'm open to dues being used as supplement. And my impression, Alan, is we're pretty much on the same wavelength there.
Well, and by the same token, they've got pictures of kind of melted file cabinets with paper in them that's not even singed.
Yes.
Right? So
yes.
That would, that would be more like a electromagnetic vibration aspect to it. So yeah, it's fascinating. You should look, Google a molecular dissociation, because it's very, very fitting in this, I think.
But of course, nukes would bring about molecular dissociation as much as dues.
If you read the literature on what that does, it really talks about, resonant frequency manipulation with electromagnetic fields and stuff. Not just a one-time burst kind of thing. But yeah, it's a good thing to look into.
Run that by me again now, Alan. I think I missed a key point.
If you read a little bit on the experimenting and the things that are going on with molecular dissociation. It seems to revolve around electromagnetic energy used in, you know, different frequencies and things like that versus gamma rays or neutrons or something.
Now, Judy, of course, suggested that Hurricane Aaron had something to do with all of this. I was never completely clear on how Judy felt that the hurricane might have contributed. But you seem to me to have a pretty clear grasp that there's all this vast number of electrons in the atmosphere, and that if you can create what you're describing as turn the towers into lightning rods, you could use that mass energy. It wouldn't have to. It's already there in the atmosphere. You don't have to create it by some independent source. It's already there in the atmosphere.
The voltage is there, but maybe not the electrons. The voltage is there all the time, but you need the free electrons to do the things like Tesla did and those kind of things.
That's where
the hurricane comes in, is creating the ice crystals that can create the free electrons.
Very, very, very interesting, Alan. So would you agree with me that the heavy lifting in terms of destroying the towers appears to have been done with nukes, but supplemented by directed energy weaponry?
No, I think the thing that turned it to dust was energy from the ionosphere. I think the ionosphere created most of the energy, and the nukes just set the channel up.
Oh, the nukes were used to set it up. Yeah. Could you review that point again in, you know, simplest possible language?
I believe the nukes were used primarily to create cesium. And cesium is what made it all into a lightning rod, because it's electromagnet. It's a thing called electronegativity. It's material that wants to suck up electrons. It's like an electron sponge. A nuclear electron sponge is what cesium is. You know, I think I remember when we used to do a few of the nuclear tests, I think they got a lot of lightning coming down sometimes when they would do those atmospheric nuclear tests early on. I think that fission devices attract electrons, it attract lightning. So, yeah, I think that it was a kind of a chemical molecular deal with that. Because else, how are you going to aim it? You got to aim it somewhere. So that's, you had to make the towers into, targets for the lightning.
Yes.
Well, hey, can I launch into something a little
please.
Bit? Little
yeah,
bit
go right
associated,
go right
a
ahead.
Little different.
Go right ahead.
Let me talk for a minute about EMP, electromagnetic pulse.
Yes.
Talk about that a lot. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what that is and why it's a threat. Just a little background. If you imagine a graph with what we call time domain, where you've got a signal of some kind going along in time, and then a different graph that shows frequency, you know, kilohertz, megahertz, gigahertz kind of thing. If in the time domain, and you can think of it like sound or music, if you've got a perfect sinusoidal wave in the time domain, that looks like just one little line in the frequency domain. So when I play, you know, a middle C, you know, the only, that's just a perfect sinusoid at that frequency, it's like right at that frequency. And when you tune into 104.5 on your radio dial, your carrier frequency is one certain frequency, okay? The thing about impulses which is EMP, is that it manifests itself across the frequency domain in a whole bunch of frequencies. So lightning is an EMP, but it's just not instantaneous enough to have, it's got a lot of lower frequency components, but not that many higher frequency components. It's kind of like I said, if you have a sinusoid, that's going to be just one particular frequency. Now, if I try to make that sinusoidal wave into a what we call a square wave, which is a little square that goes up and then down and then it's square, well, you need higher frequency components to get those little corners made. And the more higher frequency that's in the wave, the more you'll accurately get those corners just right. Kind of like in calculus, the rectangles get tighter and tighter, smaller and smaller. Same kind of thing. So the perfect impulse is what we call a Dirac function. It has like infinite magnitude and no time. It just goes blip. So impulse things, you know, spark plugs in your car, things like that. You can create impulses in lots of different ways, not just nuclear weapons. Okay, so we have devices as big as a briefcase that would take out all the electronics in a, you know, building as big as the Capitol building, maybe something like that, that are explosively driven. Doesn't have to be nuclear. Okay, and technology is a lot like rail guns. It's just you dump a lot of energy and you get a very very impulsive thing causes a CMP. So the reason you want to do that is because you might not know what your target is susceptible to. Like one frequency might screw up a computer monitor, a different frequency might screw up a phone. And so if you know what frequency messes something up, you're better off just using your energy in that frequency, okay? In Afghanistan, we knew what frequencies the artillery was susceptible to and could point like a jammer that was tuned, and they would blow up prematurely in flight kind of thing, okay? So in college, you know, electromagnetics in college, they would tell you that it's all about energy spectral density. It's how much energy, but not the total energy. It's how, you know, wide is your antenna and how broad is the frequency. So if you're, what turns out, microwave ovens in your 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi kind of use the same frequency, but it's all about energy spectral density. The microwave oven's giving you a lot more energy in that frequency. The Wi-Fi, you know, spreading it out and stuff like that. That's kind of scary though, huh? They use the same frequencies. So anyway, it's about, so ideally you'd put your energy to screw something up in a narrow band, but you don't know what it is. EMP creates energy across the band, so it can sneak in a crack or a sensor or get to it one way or the other, because it's creating all the frequencies from low to high. So EMP doesn't have to be from a satellite in space. In fact, there is no EMP in space. It turns out the if we have a weapon, an EMP weapon, it's essentially the nuclear detonation breaks it uses what we call Bremsstrahlung radiation. It's a German word that means breaking radiation. It's when electrons move real fast. So what happens is a nuclear device with nitrogen around breaks the electrons loose from the atom, and then they join real fast, and so you get this real fast impulse. You from the electrons being broke loose from the atoms and coming back, rejoining. So that really happens best where you've got a lot of nitrogen, which is at low altitudes. As you go up in the atmosphere, you get less nitrogen concentration. So an EMP weapon, nuclear-driven EMP weapon, actually would work best at ground level. But then you lose your field of view. You don't see very far. So if you go higher, then you can see a long ways, or it can manifest itself in a larger area. So there's a trade-off, but you don't want to be up, but space doesn't do it. You got to be around nitrogen to make the nuclear EMP really happen. So I am thinking there's a good possibility that this thing with the Chinese balloons that were allowed to fly overhead, it may have been a brinksmanship thing where the Chinese were saying, we've got an EMP on this. We're going to come map this out. And if you try to stop us, we're going to set off the EMP and cause this catastrophic damage. And on different treaties we've had in the past, the START Treaty, SALT Treaty, those kind of things, you know, we were allowed to put inspectors in, we traded inspectors and let people inspect stuff. So it might be a brinksmanship thing where, you know, those balloons were probably at the optimal altitude to create an EMP effect as far as the range and the nitrogen being around there.
And, of course, an EMP over America would take out our electrical grid and bring America to a halt. I mean, effortlessly, Alan. I mean, it seems to me that's one of the simplest way our enemies could take us out.
An EMP device on a balloon would really screw us up bad, yep.
Listen, we're hitting the break here. We're going to take your calls after. Call in to talk with Alan and me, Mitchell, too, about any of these subjects.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, everyone, you're welcome to call 540-352-4452. Mitchell's staying by to bring you on with Alan and me. We're welcome to talk about any of the subjects. And, of course, that introduction, that early piece by David Victor Hansen is just fantastic in its breadth and scope, and it's available to you now on my blog at jameshfetzer.org, as well as another by Edward Hendry about kind of fire. This isn't going to go away. Believe it or not, they put up a huge curtain. I mean, it kind of resembles a border wall to block seen the evidence, but it's already out there. There's always so much evidence out there. In fact, Alan, let me invite your consideration of what the hell happened in Maui. I mean, this, I am personally convinced Maui and Paradise were both classic examples of directed energy weapons. And with your expertise, perhaps you could elaborate on the difference that would have occurred had it been lasers versus masers versus microwaves. Your thoughts?
Well, I've been interested for a couple of years now on why we never heard about masers. We ought to be hearing more about masers. You know, lasers, thing about, it's all about the coherence of the electromagnetic radiation. And that's why, like, laser light is not just about the frequency, you know, the color, the red or the green or the blue or what color you make the laser invisible. It's about the coherent wavefront that lets it stay in a beam. And so, you know, so a maser is really like a laser at a different frequency, and the beam's going to be bigger and stuff. But a lot depends with the frequency you use in a device like that as to what it interacts with. And so, you know, when you see a blue car, that blue car is absorbing all of the light frequencies except the blue it's reflecting. If you have, you know, we make some communications covert, communications devices that are right in what we call the moisture absorption bands, because if we have a communications beam going, we don't want it to go further than we want it to go, so somebody can't pick up our communication past it. so you actually will build a device that is absorbed more by the water in the atmosphere. So, and those things can change. So, you know, I think there's a good chance that these things were masers and tuned to the frequencies that would heat up plants and stuff like that. Just like, which would essentially be just like a microwave oven, but in a beam form. And, you know, we have nuclear power devices that are like the size of a suitcase, not that heavy. So I think it's totally possible that you can have a space-based, satellite-based maser system that would, you know, penetrate the stuff, and you could tune it to the different frequencies you wanted. So that would be my guess is what this is. I think it's different than, you know, DEW. There's lots of different kinds of directed energy weapons.
Yes.
Besides what we've talked about. So this, I think a space-based or airborne maser is a real good suspicion.
We got a caller from the 575 area code. Caller, please give us your first name and your state and join the conversation.
Greg from New Mexico. I just heard that last. Excuse me?
Go ahead.
I just heard that last little bit about space-based. I think that's I've heard a number of people speak to the implausibility of any sort of space-based weapon making it through the atmosphere. But the point I wanted to mention, and something that I've wanted to say many times, because I've heard you talking about thermite more times than not. You say thermite rather than nanothermite. Excuse me. And then I heard just more this morning, you said that it's 1/13th the power of TNT or something like that. That is ridiculous. The main thing is you do not know what the properties of nanothermite are. There are a number of classified weapons that the United States military has made, nanothermite weapons. It's all highly secret. There's a good deal of variability as far as the properties of these weapons, and you have no idea about the properties of these weapons. When you say that nanothermite couldn't have done this, couldn't have done that, they are absolutely wrong. I have been of the opinion that...
Go ahead.
I have been of the opinion that nanothermite, because I've been on top of this since day one, nanothermite pretty much accounted, as far as I'm concerned, for what we saw happen, except for the cars outside that were I don't know what the word for it is, not burned, but that, you know, that was some kind of microwave. So I'm open to the idea. And then there's the bowl. I think they call it in the basement, the big bowl. I've seen photos of that, and that I can believe maybe there was a mini nuke that was exploded, because what happened to that bathtub, you know, but everything else. So I think it's beyond any of us who don't have any inside knowledge to really put the pieces together. Cause I think that there's a number of pieces, but the idea that nanothermite is the way you describe it, that is absolutely wrong.
Well, have you have you read the three articles that I published in 2011 with T. Mark Hightower as a chemical engineer?
No.
Well, maybe you ought to, because I think it would inform you that it is not I who am mistaken about this point. And if I've sometimes said,
well, maybe you got it from someone else.
When it was nanothermite, that's okay. Yeah, I'm talking about
But there's no comparison. There's no comparison between thermite and nanothermite. No comparison at all. They're so
all right.
Totally different.
Don't get your pants in a bunch. I meant nanothermite, not just thermite. We know thermite is used to disable artillery weapons, to fuse railroad cars together. It gets up around 4,000 degrees.
That's ordinary thermite. That's just ordinary.
This guy, listen to me. This guy, Mark Hightower, and I did a rather thorough search of the scientific literature. And yeah, you can always appeal to, you know, unspecified, unknown sources. Like, it's like those who say we actually did go to the moon, but we went to the moon using a secret technology. Well, how the hell are we supposed to be able to...
Can I interject?
Yeah. The fact is that it was impossible to go to the moon. We didn't have the propulsion power, the computing power, or the ability to withstand the Van Allen radiation belt. But the fact is, and I'll invite Alan to address this, you ought to take a look. I mean, here's a nice, I think the articles, well, they're both my blog.
I don't think you're listening to me.
Is 9/11 truth based upon a false theory is one of the three articles we published. Is 9/11 truth based upon a false theory? Go ahead.
I think your caller is right, Jim.
Go ahead, Alan.
I think there's a lot of stuff that we just don't know. Lots and lots of stuff, you know. And, you know, in the stuff I worked in, they would always tell us, I'd get these very high-level clearances and sign your life away if you ever told and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
And I was always told the really secret stuff is called company confidential.
Yeah.
Not even company in the government system, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think, you know, that there's a chance that maybe multiple mechanisms or backup mechanisms were used on 9/11. And I don't know, like I said, I don't know enough about the effects of mini nukes. And I don't know that much about what might be done with nanothermite. So I'd be inclined to, you know, withhold judgment at this point. And let's hear more.
Well, can I? 575, stick around. Paul, come on in, join the conversation.
Yeah, fascinating show. I really enjoyed it for the most part. Every now and then you do really good shows with interesting guests here. It just kind of made me think about, I mean, this is what I was going to say is, okay, how do we know what we know, and how do we know what we don't know? I mean, it just reminds me of the combination of like Tesla, Flash Gordon, and the Outer Limits sometimes. I just, like, I really want to know. I think we all do. I mean, I really would just love to know what the heck they're doing. We bump into people throughout our lives, you know, as we, you know, go about our daily travels. And I still remember, you know, some people just make an impression upon you. And, you know, there's a lot of people are full of crap, and other people, you know, are probably telling the truth. And I remember this guy, I think it was probably in the late 70s or early 80s, and I met this guy, and he was telling me, and I have no reason to doubt him, because I think he was working for some defense contractor, I forget which one, and he said that back in the early 70s, they were disintegrating objects the size of glass ashtrays with, you know, these devices, these, like, you know, laser-directed energy weapons. You know, this is supposedly, according to him, they were able to, you know, disassociate, disintegrate, whatever, small objects back in the 70s. And I'll remind people, if you don't know the work of T. Townsend Brown, a British physicist, he was levitating. He was levitating around, tethered around the pole, sandwiched metal alloys using electric current. Back then, the science was known as electrogravitics. And all the way up to the early to mid-50s, it was kind of mainstream. I believe General Electric and General Dynamics were involved in the research with electrogravitics. And then all of a sudden, it just all went dark. It all disappeared. So who knows what the heck they have. But it's, like I said, interesting discussion, especially early on, to talk about Maxwell's equations and a different sort of math. You know, just also quickly, I'll be done after this set. So it reminds me of my conversations with a friend of mine who has a degree in physics. He's got a master's degree in physics. We've talked many times. And he told me he's convinced now, based upon his own research, what he's been interested in over the years, that a lot of what he was taught is not true. A lot of what he learned is just not so.
Yeah. Yeah, Paul, that's very, very good. Listen,
hey, you know, my input
ahead
on that, you know, I got to tell you, the thing that bothers me the most in this world is how history has been changed. You know, we're taught this stuff, and it just bothers me so much that we really don't. How do you know? How do you even know what history was, you know?
Yeah, and that's the perfect point, Alan, is because, you know, we know that history is, well, as Napoleon said, is a set of lies agreed upon. But so if history can be lied about, why wouldn't they lie to us about science? I mean,
exactly.
About that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I want to invite the 575 caller to send me some links to what you got about nanothermite that you think Mark Hightower and I should consider, and I'll be glad to reach out to Mark, and we'll take a look at whatever you got.
It just comes from, following over the years. And I can tell you the problem with what you said about the moon landing versus what I'm saying is there have been multiple reports about people who have said that nanothermitic weapons have been developed. They're highly classified. There is an astounding variety in terms of the different kinds of properties they have. I don't have any links or references to this, but I have read this multiple times over the years. You know, it's very hush-hush. You're not going to get them to say anything more than that. But that much I have heard and believe. And so when you said something about how many thousands of pounds of TNT or something, you know, or like 13%, that has nothing to do with these nanothermite advanced weapons. These things are beyond your current comprehension in terms of their capabilities. I am quite sure of that. And I would point out the fact that the molten steel dripping from the tower was most likely because a nanothermite charge went off prematurely, out of sequence or something. That you can't explain that with nukes. I don't believe that was a dew either. I think that was nanothermite.
Well, look, I'm delighted to hear you have this sincere belief. And if I have differing sincere beliefs, let's see if we can arbitrate based on some evidence. You're telling me you've heard this, you've heard that. That's not evidence.
But,
that's not proof.
I understand. I don't have a reference to give you. But can I say something here? I can tell you definitively that what you said about nanothermite being a weak explosive being 1/13, that is so absolutely wrong. That is easily confirmable. That is just flat out bunk.
Well, I think you're mistaken about this, but I'm saying Mark Hightower and I published three articles in 2011. You can get a summary overview if you go to my blog, jameshfetzer.org, and look at On C-SPAN, Richard Gage leaves 9/11 truth in a time warp. Now, let me tell you that we published those in 2011. There's never been a refutation coming from architects and engineers, Steve Jones, Kevin Ryan, the whole bunch. They have never disputed our claims about nanothermite, which were based on a rather thorough search of the scientific literature. So on that basis, I think it's prima facie, to me, evident that your case is weak. Your case is weak. And
common sense would tell you that my case is strong.
You need to look. I'm telling you, I'm open-minded. If I got something wrong, if Mark Hightower and I needed to reconsider, but we've never had a refutation coming from the nanothermite crowd, which would have the keenest motive to defend and debunk us. They have never done it. You've never even read our articles. So I say, unless you can put up something here to substantiate your view, which I'm willing to take into account and share with Mark Hightower, you got nothing. You got impressions. You got a sincere belief. That is not knowledge. We did the research. Turns out nanothermite only has a 1/13 the explosive force of TNT. It's a feeble explosive. It was Niels Herit. Was a professor of chemistry emeritus from the University of Copenhagen who gave that estimate of how much nanothermite it would take to take down a twin tower of the, 29,000 metric tons. So these are the guys who are the foremost proponents of nanothermite, which you are not. I mean, I'm glad that you believe it. I'm asking you to share with me some evidence and let me take it into account. Paul, your thoughts.
I had to unmute. Yeah, that's all interesting. I haven't done this research. I've heard you talk about the research that you've done. So I've not looked at any data regarding, you know, thermite or nanothermite. So I'm just I don't have a side to pick in that fight. I think we can all conclude based upon what we all already believe that they've got multiple. They have an array. They have an arsenal of various toys. That's what I like to call it. And they play around with it. If you've seen the work of some of these people online exposing these fires and, you know, the various things. I mean, there's a guy saying they're using some sort of plasma weapon to start fires in the ground. That they got trees burning from the inside out. I mean, that has to be microwave. There's just, again, it's a little bit frightening to think of the fact that we don't know, but somebody does. And, yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, let me go back to Alan. Alan, you've been just wonderful and covered such a breadth. Give us your further thoughts. I mean, we all agree the military has technology it's not sharing with a public. The problem is to sort things out based upon the evidence available, the resources available to us. And I respect those who even vigorously believe it was done with nanothermite. I can only explain to the best of my knowledge, based on the research I've done with a chemical engineer, where we published three articles that have stood unrebutted. It doesn't appear that nanothermite could possibly have been responsible for the demolition of the Twin Towers. Now that it was used in cleanup, or even thermite in cleanup, there's no doubt about that. I agree that completely.
Your caller did have some evidence, Jim. Have some evidence, which was he knows a guy who told him, and he was credible. And said, and I can't tell you more. And to me, that's credible information.
It's not even verifiable. I mean, that's ridiculous, Alan. I mean, that's just wrong. Paul,
sometimes trusted sources make a difference.
I would be surprised if Alan was not being facetious. That's like officials say, you know, you read those old newspapers.
Okay.
Official.
I'm not being facetious.
I wanted to weigh in on what you just said, Jim, about these articles remain unrebutted. Okay, so in speaking with this friend of mine that I mentioned before, who's got the degree in physics, and a couple other people here and there over the course of time. So these articles that get published in scientific journals, and everybody talks about peer review. They have to, oh, it's a peer review. Well, guess what? These peers that they're referring to don't really review. They're not going to duplicate the experiment. And in many cases, they're not really going to look into it that much. So the idea that an article is rebutted or unreported, it doesn't really mean a lot. I'm not saying that what the work that you did, I'm not in any way disparaging it. Oh my gosh, I got a train going by here. I don't know if you can hear that. But anyway, like I said, the idea that people are going to take the time and do the contrary research, whatever, to indeed rebut it, it doesn't really mean anything. That's all I
say. Paul, I think you missed the context. This is exchanges with Kevin Ryan, Steve Jones, the parties who are promoting the nanothermite. If they could refute it, they would refute it. They haven't refuted it. That is the point. It's not that it went into scientific journals. These are publications at T-Mark Hightower, and I made three of them in 2011 that, to the best of my knowledge, have not been rebutted by those in the position who have the greatest stake and have the research ability to rebut it if they could do it. I mean, that's the deal.
No, but again, I just want you to understand, I'm not taking issue with what you've said and the claims you're making. I don't know. But what I am saying is what you just said right now is a presumption. In other words, if they could rebut it, they would. That's a presumption, just so you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we're engaged in debate, and they're not offering even an argument. But, of course, technically, you're correct. Alan, go ahead, add a few words. We're about to conclude our conversation, but I'm very, very pleased with everything you had to say today. Please.
I just want to say I was not being facetious. Sometimes if there's a credible source and he can't tell you more than they told you, I think it'd make a difference to me.
Jim and I have mocked before on the show, but I know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. You know, it's like all these victim fake shootings where somebody always claims, oh, I know somebody that got shot or whatever. And it's just always turned out to be BS.
But I don't dismiss it just because the people who aren't in the know haven't.
Well, it's a heuristic. It's suggestive. It invites further research. But we don't even know who the source is supposed to be. I mean, how can we even verify that the report is accurate? Maybe there was a misunderstanding in the process, not intentional, but a misunderstanding.
But maybe that's the point, is maybe not to be so firm in the conviction that it couldn't have been nanothermite, because there may be things we haven't discovered or don't know. So
Look, all scientific reasoning is tentative and fallible. And you get more evidence, you may have to reject hypotheses you previously accepted, accept hypotheses you previously rejected. What I'm telling you is, based upon the research I've done with a chemical engineer, it was fairly thoroughgoing. The best supported hypothesis is nanothermite can't possibly have done it. And there's lots of substantiation from proponents of nanothermite, such as Niels Harrit, suggesting it would have required this absolutely staggering quantity of nanothermite to have destroyed a twin tower. That's confirmation of our conclusion. It's not a refutation. That's a point I'm making. Go right ahead.
Well,
I don't have anything else to add.
I was gonna say I sprinkled a little nanothermite on my frosted mini wheats this morning.
Okay, and 575, listen, if you can come up with some source and get them to me, I will share them with Mark Hightower. We'll go back and review the bidding, and if we got something wrong, we'll be glad to correct it. Mitchell, thank you for letting me know about that fascinating article by Victor David Hansen. That was really sensational. It is available on my blog now at jameshfetzer.org. Let me encourage everyone to have a great weekend. Spend as much time as you can with your friends, your loved ones, the people you care about. The West is so eager to get into a nuclear exchange with Russia, we cannot discount it could happen almost any time, sad to say. So have a great weekend. I'm glad you were here at Revolution Radio, and a special thanks to Alan, to our caller from 575, and to you, Paul, for the comments and questions. You've certainly contributed to an interesting debate. And we can all go back and take another look at 9/11 and how it was done with this additional information available, thanks to Alan. Welcome. Welcome all. Thank you, one and all.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
we did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their